Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Good evening. It is the LFC Day Trippers. It is the Monday Night Forum. It is Ray Dicko, your host. I am back from a few weeks away, and I finally gotten over the fact that England didn't win those Euros. Yeah, you'll be pleased.
Oh, did they not? I thought they won it ages ago.
Yeah, I thought it was in the bag, Andy, myself, but I got a bit carried away there, so I had to dust myself down, and I am now back. Scouse, not English. We are back full on LFC with a few weeks to go to the new season. So I shed that skin, and tonight we've got Andy Young, Top Red. How you doing, Andy?
Top Red. I'm doing good, right?
Excellent. Good. We've got Davo, who's confusing me greatly with his cross between a GAA top and a golfing cap.
Ah, yeah. Got to lend the cap off, Andy.
Stuck into all kinds of sports, I would imagine. Are you, Davo? Yeah.
Look, I can waffle about it, and
it's free season.
We know.
And then down we've got Pete down in the bottom right hand corner. We've got Pete Smith from Barcelona. How are you doing, Pete?
How's it going? And good to see you again, Dick, after so long.
Yeah, cheers, Pete. Good to be back with everyone. So we've got four topics tonight. We're going to start with Davo this evening. He's going to kick things off with the summer clear out and Liverpool clearing the decks, raising the capital that's required to bring in nobody, probably. To funnel off to the Red Sox potentially. And then we've got Andy, who's going to have a discussion around some of the comments that came out from Jeannie Wijnaldum earlier over the weekend and last week about his departure from Liverpool and what surrounded that. Peter's going to talk about the accountability that is in football, or lack of it, for certain clubs, whereas we're strictly sort of playing it by the book, so to speak. And then I will wrap things up and have a general discussion about what I feel is going to be the best season ever, potentially, in some respects, given other clubs strengthening. And I think we've got plenty to go to war with, even if we don't make too much of a splash in the transfer market for the rest of the season. So we will start with Davo. Davo, we've seen some players leave over the last few days. We've seen Harry Wilson leave yesterday, £12 million to Fulham following a number of loan moves previous to that. He's finally gone off the books. We've seen Gruitch go a few days back as well. There's talk of Shaqiri now getting into serious talks with Lazio, I believe. And then we've got, you know, the potential of Minamino moving on, Harvey Elliott, some sort of sounds about him going out on loan this season. So I'll hand it over to you, Davo. What's your feeling on all of this right now?
Well, I think the last time I was on, it was just before pre-season started, and it was an uppy, excited topic. Just great to see the lads back. And I think this is as well. You don't like to see people, look, it's just part and parcel of football players moving on. And I won't steal this because it was Andy's show earlier, but it looks like an awful lot of pre-pandemic, kind of last summer's business, if it had been a normal summer, is kind of getting done now. Like you said, Gruitch is gone, Wilson is gone. The wheels are in motion, really, for signings are going to come in. That's just, I think if we all love a nice shiny new sign, and I think most of us do, but this had to be done first. We are not a team that needs six or seven bodies to come in. We needed to get rid of a few, trim that squad down, and then bring in a couple, one or bring in probably two starters, or very close to starters, that are going to make a difference for us. So I think it's a positive thing what's happening in these few weeks. Like you said, you're getting lads off the wage. Well, I have a list here. You've Gruitch, Wilson, Owen Iwi's gone back to Union Berlin. Shaq is seemingly talking to Lazio or starting to make moves at Lazio. These lads are on decent wages, particularly Luis of Gruitch. Shaq would be on decent wages. Minamino looks like it could be a loan later in the window to Southampton with an obligation to buy. We have Ojo linked with Brentford today. Elliot could be going on a loan seemingly to Brentford. I would probably like him to stay, but Brentford would seem like a good loan. But listen, the point of the topic is there's space being made up now to start making moves to bring the couple of players in that we need. And I think that's nothing but a positive.
Yeah, I mean, over to you, Andy. I mean, this, for all intents and purposes, this summer has always looked like it needed to get, I think Deadwood would be a little bit harsh, but it certainly needed to have a bit of a spring clean. And that didn't just mean bringing in one or two or three new faces, but it did also mean letting players go, get them off the wage bill, let them try and push on, resurrect their careers elsewhere, yeah?
Yeah, Davo said it there. Last year, they tried to do a lot of business, and obviously it wasn't possible with the pandemic really kicking off and taking hold of football and the finance of football. So all that uncertainty, it's probably been a bit of a setback in the plan. As much as Liverpool will plan to bring players in and to succession plan, they have to get rid of certain players, whether you want to call it deadwood or players that just haven't quite worked out. But it's part of football. Players have to leave. A lot of players featured last season that would have never featured only for all the injuries. So that absolutely has to be done. It's just when you look at two transfer windows of exits, it adds up. You know, it is a big clear out when you count up these players. We've named them already, but we Kabak, who played quite a lot of games last year, Gini, who played practically all the games. You've Gruitch there, who played no games, but it's still an exit that's being promised for a while. And look, Origi, Shaq, Nat Phillips probably go. One of the Williams might go. You know, these are players that have had involvement. And then there's a few players like Karius, you know, who was kind of gone, and Minamino, who was gone as well. But they got all that up, and they add up to a significant amount of money that can be reinvested in and players over the course of, you know, their contracts. And I'm fairly certain that the owners will reinvest that. They always have, and there might be a little bit extra on top of that. So if you look at maybe six, seven players gone, I'm sure we'll see at least another two or three come in.
Yeah, I mean, Pete, Andy touches on something there around reinvesting this cash that we're raising through sales of players. I mean, you know, 12 million, you know, it's not a bad fee for it's not a bad fee we've just got from Fulham. Gruitch obviously cash there in the bank. Do you expect us to spend all of this cash in this window? Yeah.
The idea of spending money needs to be looked at. I mean, Liverpool, obviously, you know, the model that FSG have, which works, is that we spend what we have, but we don't, you know, people need to get out of their heads and claim, if there's anyone left out there who doesn't understand the way it works, that we don't, for example, we don't wait to save 30 million and then buy a 30 million player. Liverpool will make a series of deals where they will structure their payments very, very meticulously, very carefully. And I have to hand it to Fulham as well, looking at what they did with Harry Wilson, following the rules again. And that would be a huge topic later on. Following the rules, they obviously understand that they can't buy their way out of the championship. So we won't charge them a penny effectively until 2022. I think that's quite clever. But yeah, I think I agree with Andy that a lot of the deadwood, you know, that was postponed from being moved on from last year is now being kind of shifted on. And Liverpool will invest. It's all about having that money to say, okay, we pay X amount up front, and we structure this deal over the next three or four seasons. That's the way Liverpool do business. And we'll talk about it later on. I love the way Edwards and FSG do their business. It's incentivized. It keeps clubs interested, and it puts real value on what you're trying to do out there in the market. Everything else, in my view, destroys hunger. You know, you look at the deals being done, and you know, you throw 50, 60, 70 million in one go for a player. Unless it's a Virgil van Dijk level, it very rarely works out, whether it's the club looking at you kind of thinking, are you fooled? Or whether it's a player looking at you kind of thinking, you've destroyed my hunger now. I'm no longer, I've made it. I'm there. I don't need to be incentivized. I love the way Liverpool do business, to be honest. It's not for the Twitterati who have no patience and want to see everyone come in one fell swoop, but it's for the guys out there, the players out there who believe in their own ability and need to be incentivized. So, yeah, I agree with Andy. We sell, and it's funny, Philip Casey made the point a few weeks ago. The machine is fed by all of these young players like Ryan Kent, for example, who come in. We get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million pounds for them, and then we invest that £10 million cleverly in bigger names and structure those deals to incentivize both the player and the selling club. So I'm really happy with the way Liverpool do business.
So just back to you, Davo, before we move past this. So if we've raised pretty much £30 million from the three lads who've gone so far, potentially more to come in. If we were to invest in a 40 to 50 million pound player in this window, what position would you want that to be in?
Listen, I think the two we need is in midfield and then someone up front. Be it whether you want the boys discussed it last night, whether you want a Vlahovic type of centre forward, kind of a bit of a target man that can move, or you want to go somewhere. I know Malin has gone to Dortmund today, or is in the process of going. You want someone that can play across that front three. That's a decision, obviously, for the manager and Michael Edwards and whatnot, but it'll be one of them two positions, definitely. Gidi will have to be replaced. I'm not sure. I would keep Nat Phillips around. I think he's proven himself to be in the squad, because I would be of the opinion, Sean, he said it last night, knee injuries, they aren't the death sentence that they used to be for a career, which I totally agree with. But I think what you generally find is I think Van Dijk and Gomez are one of them, or maybe they will pick up a muscle injury after being out. When you go back to game intensity after being out for 9 months and all that, the knee is fine, you've done all your chin work, you've done all, but game intensity, twist and turn, and we can see a muscle injury being picked up. I think it actually happened to Ox when he came back as well. I think he might have picked up a calf strain or kept him out for a couple of weeks. So I would like to see, at least 6 months anyway, going into January, seeing how the two boys are, which I'm sure will be fine, but I would still like to have Phillips there rather than maybe getting rid of him and relying. Because listen, at some stage, Matip is just one of them. Klopp would be doing his press conference on the tours, then he'd just drop in with 5 minutes left. Yeah, listen, Joel is out. And he got a kick in training, and Joel is out. Nothing too serious, but he's out.
Over 6 weeks.
Yeah, and he might be out for 4 weeks. So I would personally keep Williams around. Now, having said that, I think if a club comes in and bids maybe 15, 18, 20 million, I think Liverpool might say, and they probably wouldn't be wrong, this is the height of his value, and it will be the time to cash in, which could happen as well. But I would keep him around. But yeah, listen, I think I think probably in midfield would be the one. If we can get someone in midfield to replace Gini, I think that's really where the majority of the money I would spend it anyway.
I think Dave's LFC chat's been reading my mind there. He's saying keep Nat Phillips till January. Andy, I think there's a case can be made for that, isn't there? Because essentially, if we keep him around as a bit of an insurance policy, and then we get to January and the lads have kind of got, you know, the likes of Van Dijk, Gomez and Matip, you're able to rely on at least two of those. You've got Konate as well. There could potentially be a market for Nat Phillips in January from a team who's looking to solidify going into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only mentioning him because he's been strongly linked with a move to Brighton and who else? Newcastle were mentioned. Burnley. Look, he got us over Howell last year. If he wants to stay at Liverpool, he should be let stay. There should be no reason whatsoever to be rushing out the door. I mean, we shouldn't be desperate to be getting rid of centre backs of all positions after the season we had last year. And I think Dave is right. January at the very least, you got to look and see how Konate settles in. You have to look at how Van Dijk and Gomez and Matip, all their injuries progress, you know, or their recoveries progress. They'll have to be preventative. Like, you can't just play Van Dijk every game as soon as he's back in. You know, you would assume that's a bit reckless. So keep the numbers around, especially at centre half. And look, there's some of them that could, you know, Gomez can do a job as cover for right back as well. So if you see a centre back going like Nat Phillips, or whether Davis, that never really got a look in. If you see any of them going, I'd be sure we'd replace them. I wouldn't be surprised to see come back in. So you just keep the numbers there. There should be no rush whatsoever to get rid of those.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's also League Cup football to consider, isn't there? Before Christmas, I think that gets all the way through the kind of semi-final stage. Then you've got Champions League. Hopefully, you get one, maybe two dead rubbers there that you can play Nat Phillips in. And so there's definitely a few games there for him, I think, if he hangs around. So look, we'll move it on. We'll move on to one of the exits, the first exit really that we were all aware of, and there was obviously always a little bit of a. I mean, there was no cloud really in terms of Gini's exit. I didn't think from the fan base point of view, but actually, he went what I thought was with goodwill, but it turns out, you know, that Gini's had a few words to say, and actually maybe the
what's happened there?
The bunker. I think we've lost the bunker and we've lost Shane. Well, not to look at it. It's interesting. He's getting onto Gini Wijnaldum.
Will we wait till they get back or we have a little chat amongst ourselves? Let's have a look at some of the comments.
We've obviously been banned from mentioning the name Gini Wijnaldum.
Yeah. Well, here's our host back now. Anyway, we'll get him back.
He's jumping back in before I absolutely crucify him.
What's going on? The Gremlins have you tonight, Ray. And Davo.
And Davo. Yeah,
Davo was pinged out.
Very good. Right, so go on to you, Andy, around Wijnaldum, yeah?
Hold on, there's the Davo fella back in now.
What happened there?
We are back. Yeah, we're back. We're sponsored by AIG and Ping.
I was off social media for most of the last 4 or 5 days. I was away a little bit, and so I was lucky that I avoided the reaction to this Gini story. But I did kind of catch some of the cynical reactions that are out there, and you know. that it's just cover for demanding more money. You know, in Pierce's article today suggested that it was more about the club digging their heels in than anything else. But look, for me, Ginny's always been an honest player. He gave everything and he spoke up openly when he needed to, when he felt he had to say something. Like the Champions League semi-final against Barca was one occasion where he was left out, and after kind of winning the game for us, he was very sure to make sure he said he was disappointed. So he's always been an honest player. So I'm trusting here. I think we own that. I just think that the fan behaviour has always been a pet hate of mine. Most people know, like, ever since Lucas used to get dogs abuse. I think even these days it's nothing compared to the reach and influence from the modern social media world, how players can hear these voices of fans and the negativity as well. And like most people, part of me is saying, oh, come on, don't be so precious, like, you get paid well enough. And I'm not aware if it ever escalated to anything really nasty like racism or death threats, that sort of territory. But even so, what are so-called supporters doing directly tweeting players all this criticism and stick? Like, I see the type when Alan was getting slaughtered in his performances and the value of the team, he wasn't getting assists, he wasn't scoring goals. And we know, as decent fans, that wasn't his role. Like, no. He was never present for Klopp in that team, you know, and that was for following his orders and doing very well and playing that role effectively, just like Henderson used to take all that stick when he was kind of playing a deep role. And like, whether you think he's being overly sensitive or it's, you know, the reality of it is that these things are getting to players, you know. Okay, maybe just switch off altogether, get off social media, but it shouldn't have to be that way. You know, your absolute minimum requirement as a supporter is to support. You know, it's not too much to ask. And what these dickheads seem to be completely oblivious to the fact is that the sort of behaviour that they're going on with affects performances. And in this case, it's played a role in him not extending his contract, you know, whether you want to believe or not. But I trust him. I believe him. I do think it played a role. And people might laugh and think it's ridiculous, but the margins at this level are so fine. You don't need to be given the opposition these competitive advantages by slaughtering your players and having any sort of messages going into their heads, going into games, because that's what these younger players are, these modern players are doing. They're spending time on social media, and some people do get affected by negativity. You know, they don't take aboard all the support that they're getting. So I just think spending your days hampering the potential to your own football team is incredible, and it needs to stop. And it's not the Liverpool way at all. I expect that from other teams, but not Liverpool. We've always been the team that supported the players, and he said it himself when he's in the ground. He never heard any of those sort of groans or those shouts. And look, we can talk about the divide of locals and the game goers and whatnot, but look, I'll give these people that are on social media that never go to the games some credit. Like, they're fans as well. They should be fans. They should be supporting the team. And an absolute minimum is not to be giving your fucking players shite like that. And to factor in their decision-making when it comes to extending the contract. He was offered a contract, right? Maybe it wasn't enough money, but it played a role in him leaving. And that's thanks to these dickheads on social media. So I'm disappointed that our own fans, people who consider themselves supporters, are that naive to think that what they're saying on social media doesn't have an effect. It needs to stop, especially for Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, Red Steve makes a good point there. If he thinks PSG doesn't have wankers on Twitter, he's a mug, and he's no mug.
But that's no excuse. That's no excuse. Like, I mean, maybe he expects that from PSG fans, but he doesn't expect that from Liverpool fans. Maybe he's happy out. I'll go over there. I'll earn my last book. I'll ignore the fans. But the bond between Ginny and Liverpool, and the bond between most players and the club, is different than clubs like PSG. They're a revolving door. It's just splash the cash. There's no relationship there. These players come into Liverpool, come into Melwood or the new training ground. They build up a rapport with the staff there. Everybody's one. Everybody's part of the same mission. So I don't really think it's a case where he's expecting that different from PSG. I just think he might be expected a bit more from Liverpool. And I certainly expect a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, Davo, this is a player, I mean, Andy references Lucas Leiva, yeah? Different sort of era, really, in terms of the success of the club. I mean, this was a player who came on and scored two goals in probably the most memorable game at Anfield, certainly in recent history. Come off the bench, scored two goals. He's a player that's won a Champions League with us, has won a Premier League with us. As Andy says, if you go to a game, I honestly can't think of a game where Gini Wijnaldum came under any sort of criticism from the crowd. Not even from individuals. I mean, Lucas Leiva and players like, you know, Mignolet,
Lovren.
Years Lovren, you know, would be singled out consistently, and you know, fans would be, you'd know, particularly if you're sitting in the same seat, you'd know that an individual has got an axe to grind with a particular player. As soon as they do something wrong, they'd be straight on the back. None of this with Gini Wijnaldum. So it purely is kind of the social media kind of fan, if you like. You know, that's kind of that he is absolutely kind of pointing the finger at here. Do you buy this, or do you think that he did dig a little bit of a hole, as in he said he was going to reveal the reasons why he was going to be, you know, deciding to exit the club? It does seem like a little bit of a stretch in some respects. Are you fully buying it, or do you think his mind was made up and he's trying to kind of look a little bit better than being a kind of mercenary, should we say?
It's a good topic because I think there's a few different strands to it, right? I just think direct messaging a player on Twitter to abuse him has absolutely no place. Like, has absolutely no place to send abuse to you tag a player going, "You're absolutely shit, this, that, and the other." That, in my opinion, that has no place. You've had the likes of Neco Williams deleting the social media accounts or blacking them out, the picture, because of the abuse he was getting. He's only a young kid coming in, you know what I mean? It's hard to come in and give Trent a break, et cetera, et cetera. But on the flip side of that, like, we're all on Twitter, and me and Andy or me and Pete or whoever could be having a conversation and say, "Well, I think Lovren was shit today. I think Mignolet was shit today." I think that's fine. I think it's fine to have a conversation, even through a medium of Twitter, and say, "Well, I thought your man was poxy today, blah, blah, blah." Now, if players are searching their own names and scrolling through abuse and all that, well, look, that's on them. Like, that's, do you know what I mean? Of course, what you're going to get, not everything is going to be good. You're going to get comments that you don't like. But I just think this is just a case of Gini and the club couldn't agree a deal, be it, I'd imagine it's to do with money. It might have been a contract length as well, could have been an issue. They couldn't do a deal. It happens all the time in football. There's absolutely no issue with that. The club probably felt, rightly or wrongly, I always think there's a time. I always like to kind of feel that if you can sell a player slightly earlier, you should, rather than slightly too late. As in, we don't know what it. Look, I love Gini. Like you said, never heard him get any stick in the ground. Brilliant player, a legend. Like Shawnee said last night, he classed him as a legend, definite legend at the club. But he's just gone Turkey, I think, isn't he? He's played a lot of games, a lot of minutes in them legs. Holland again in the summer, played all the minutes. Is it the right time to let him go and not give him a 4-year contract on X amount of money a week? Time will tell. I don't have any issue with the club not paying him the money. But this kind of story, to me, is kind of an on-story. I don't, like, Gini Wijnaldum could have come out and said anything. It doesn't matter. You don't play for Liverpool anymore, so I don't really care. Like, the abuse thing, don't direct message a player. Absolutely agree with that. But listen, Gini, I don't really care. You're gone. Like, I don't believe it was anything. I'll put it this way. If the himself and the club agreed money-wise and lent the contract-wise, he'd have signed that contract. He wouldn't have gone, "No, I'm not gonna sign because I'm getting a bit of stick on Twitter." Of course he'd have fucking signed the deal. Because he's obviously a bit, it's obviously sticking in his craw a bit that he didn't get the deal he wanted off Liverpool. So, which is fine as well. Like I said, I don't think anyone is like it's a multifaceted argument here, but I don't really like Genie. Yeah, get a bit of stick off fans. Like, you would have signed a deal if it was right all around. And you coming out to say this, fair enough. It doesn't stay in his stay at the club or the way I view him or anything like that. I just don't really care. Like, you don't play for us anymore. That's it.
Just say there though, look, sometimes money does make these things go away. Sometimes money would make you just ignore it. Like, I'm just saying that he is claiming that it played a role in his decision making. And I believe him. I believe it did play a role. And I do think that the modern footballer does get caught up in fan opinion. And it can get into their heads and affect their confidence. You know, if a player's not playing well, if he felt that his performances weren't of the level that he expects of himself, and he goes onto social media and sees that backed up, because you're only going to see all them comments, you know, sometimes.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Maybe the phrase, if you, what you see, what you want to see is wrong, but it's if he's looking for reasons to kind of agree with that his performances weren't of a standard, all he's going to see is that. And that's not going to do players any good. Look, the same goes for every player at the club who is on long-term contracts or would sign an extension, whether it's Henderson. Henderson's took more stick than him. But I'm just saying, if you consider yourself a proper supporter, stop. Cop onto yourself. A lot of the lads there are saying that, how do you know it was Liverpool fans? Well, like, you just have to take it that it is. Look, I've seen some of the comments from people I do know are genuine Liverpool fans who do comment on every game, who do comment on performances, good and bad, and they went a bit heavy about Ginny, saying he offers nothing in the team. You know what I mean? What's players going to?
You're saying to me there about him checking his performances to see where. Like, for me, he's been one of the most consistent performers we've had in the last couple of years. I'd rarely watch a game and go, "Jesus, Genie was shy." Rarely. Like, there is games where he doesn't hit the heights, but I've always found him to be a consistent performer for the club. Give him you'd struggle to get a beach ball off him in a phone box. You know what I mean? We all see that. You come in, the ball comes into him, tight areas, holds players off. Brilliant player.
Yeah. So absolute quality. But some fans couldn't see that for whatever reason. Maybe they just don't like that type of player. They want to see the Ginny that plays for Holland, for instance, that they expect more goals and assists and all that contributing. But if Ronaldo had been played in a 10, I'm sure he would have done that for us too. But he played the game because Klopp wanted him to play and wanted to do that role. And he was following orders. He's a real professional, a real honest player to stick to that role for so long and then to go away on international duty and play a totally different game. I think he's a massive loss. And I think he has the credibility to be listened to there. And I think he should be taken on board for fans. Okay, you're never going to get rid of. There's idiots that are saying horrible things on Twitter day in, day out, racists and whatever. But I'm talking to Liverpool fans here. Cop fucking on. You know what I mean? If you want to give the team you support a competitive advantage, and that's what it's all about at this level, fine margins. You can lose leagues by a point or by goal difference. Don't be going onto Twitter and giving your players shit. Look. We sit on podcasts and we criticise players, but I like to think we do it in a measured way. You know what I mean? And we appraise players and give them credit where it's due, or give a critical analysis of a performance. But some of the behaviour of our own fans, seriously, it's not Liverpool.
And that was a party political broadcast by the top party, by Andy Young for the last 5 or 6 minutes. That was a good old rant, that, Andy. You were absolutely flying there.
Up in the soapbox.
He needs to be in, is it Hyde Park Corner, I think it is, where there's the most famous of soapboxes. So, Pete, I just want, just to wrap this up, interested to hear your thoughts on the social media aspect, but also as we kind of bridge into your topic, it is really about, I think some of this comes back to how the club runs, how the club is run by the owners. And I think we, you know, we're seeing this now with Jordan Henderson as well. It's, you know, when players get to the 30s, you know, the club has obviously certain ways that they approach contract negotiations, extension, renewals. Surely that was kind of at the front of all of this, and then everything sort of works sort of behind that.
First of all, I want to say I'm a huge fan. I always have been of Gino Wijnaldum as a player. Now, from the beginning, I'll be honest, when he was a Newcastle player, I didn't know what he did, because I looked at him when we signed him and I thought, you know, this is a winger who is not particularly skillful. He seems to have a bit of energy and he seems to turn up when he wants to. I think Klopp did bring something out in him that a lot of people didn't think. So I'm a huge fan of what he brings. But I think what people always forget about Liverpool Football Club, and certainly about the way FSG and the way Michael Edwards and to a certain extent Jurgen Klopp and the committee run things, they don't seem to make exceptions for anyone in any circumstance. And that's borne out by the fact that there's still a huge cloud of uncertainty around what's going to happen with the captain. And I think we can all dress it up with semantics. My view would be that Gini Wijnaldum, the club, recognises, and I think he would have a particular soft spot for Gini Wijnaldum as a player, considering he helped to mould that player into what he is. And he would probably have spoken to him and said, listen, you're 29, you're nearly 30, but physiologically, you're probably, you know, like Henrik Larsson was, 24, 25. So I'm going to have a good chat with the organisation and make sure that we get what you want. And he was probably met with, well, no, Jürgen, we all agreed that we would do things the way they're going to be done, and we're not going to break it for anyone. And by the way, he wants as much money as Mohamed Salah. So that was probably a non-start. I think Gini Wijnaldum feels betrayed. I won't say by Jurgen Klopp, because that's not true, but he probably feels betrayed by what he may have been promised. And in order to vent, because I think he made a statement a few weeks ago saying, I'm going to come out and I'm going to make a statement and watch this, and then probably sat down and had a think about it and thought to himself, okay, I'll go in another direction. Because the statement, to be honest with you, the weekend was fucking childish, unless it was related to racism. That's where I draw the line. If Gini Wijnaldum wants to talk about receiving racist abuse, but let me tell you, when a fan of a football club or when a supporter of a football club is dissatisfied with a player's performance, now don't get me wrong, they're not experts, they don't know the game, and I agree with Andy's point in just because you're not making goals and assists, it doesn't mean that you're not, you know, contributing to the game. There's a lot of naivety. But people, you cannot tell people that they're not entitled to communicate their frustrations at any player. And it's not just, if it was solely at Gini Wijnaldum, I would accept that point. But we've seen everybody receive it. However, and I listened to everything that you guys have to say, and I understand getting behind everyone. But the value of real cheering a player and really cheering on a player is that it's genuine. You know, if you're going to tell every player that he's fucking world class, there comes a stage when, you know, your support of that player is worthless, because you say that to all the players just because I'm wearing a red fucking jersey. Pardon my language. Because this annoys me, I have to say. Part of being an elite sportsman is understanding that you're professional. €150,000 a week. Okay? €150,000 a week. Now, I'm not saying that entitles anyone to give you abuse, but it certainly entitles people to their opinion. So if Gini made the statement, said, I wasn't feeling the love, sorry for you. Don't get me wrong, I love them. Real football supporters love them. Like the guys in our firm, we saw the value, the endless energy. You know, what he did the night in Barcelona was nothing short of miraculous. And for that alone, he's an absolute legend. I agree with Sean. But, you know, unless you're coming out and saying that I was abused and it was over the top, it was about my family, it was about the colour of my skin, then you've got my sympathies. But don't waste that thing. However, moving on to the other side of things, I do believe that to be honest with you, his frustrations. He's 30 years of age and he deserves, he's a professional top of his game, captain of his country in the absence of Virgil van Dijk. So deserves that final big payoff that he probably expected. And by the way, that Jordan Henderson expects. Don't make no mistake. Jordan Henderson expects that final big payday of the final contract and is disappointed not to get it. But I would prefer, personally, me, and I'm not speaking for anyone in the forum, I would prefer someone to say, listen, I'm a pro. I've got to feed my family. I don't want my grandchildren to have to work. So there's an offer on the table from Qatar, from Paris, from other clubs of in excess of 230 grand basic. On a good week, I can make 290 grand. Why should I turn that down? I prefer somebody to say that than turn around and say, now, I know he didn't link the two, but he knew that the inference was there. So I prefer somebody to say, pay me, than, you know, say, I wasn't feeling the love. Not feeling the love is absolute bullshit, because real supporters, and let me tell you, he would have been aware of the support he was getting from real football supporters, would have been telling him every week, oh, you know, the work you do on and off the ball is superb. So he knows. He knows how that he's valued. Don't talk to me about not feeling valued. There'll always be that lunatic fringe that will criticize you because they don't like you. That's a reality of regardless. Even Leo Messi gets that shit. You're not tall enough.
Mohamed Salah gets it.
Yeah, listen, Mohamed Salah gets it worse than anyone. And that's a good point, to be honest with you. And unjust of Mohamed Salah is unquestionable, but gets questioned every day. However, I'm not buying the whole, you know, show me the love bullshit. Take that show me the love to Paris in front of nobody, you know, in that fake organization within that fake league. Listen, I'm sorry that Gini Wijnaldum is not going to be part of it. A very versatile player, an excellent player, and a big miss for Liverpool. I'm more disappointed as a supporter of Liverpool Football Club that we don't seem to have a clear plan to replace him, and that people are talking about replacing him from within the squad. We will not.
Well, I think he was replaced by Thiago last year.
I disagree. However, but let me tell you something. I'm more, because it shows me that there was a lot of tuning for, and I think Klopp carries the can for that. He was probably fighting to have the contract there. I think Klopp really wanted it. However, for me, don't make a statement like I'm not feeling the love. And I mean, that's just, I'm sorry, it's childish. Unless he's talking about abuse, and let me tell you, we're fighting.
Sure, he was abused. Okay.
No, he was criticized, Andy. He was criticized. And for me, the statement he made at the weekend told me that he doesn't like criticism. Criticism is part and parcel of professional
sport. Yeah, but I don't think it's a case where he was just criticized. I think he got over the top abuse at times.
From idiots, though. I mean, he should be discerning enough to know that this group of people are idiots. Yeah. And if certain people abuse me or criticize me from certain corners, then I take notice. Every single player in that squad that we have, except Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah, look, there's a very,
it's criticized and or abused.
There's a very defensive line between criticizing a performance or a run of performances than abusing a player. You know what I mean? Just for him to make that statement, and as I said, I do trust his words when he says
it. Make the statement when you're at the club. Stand up while you're at the club. Have the balls to say, I'm not putting up with this. By the way, I've just single-handedly beat Barcelona. Who are you to fucking criticize me? Make that statement.
It was a good bit after that. You know what I mean? It was a good bit after that. It was a short season where maybe his performances weren't of the standard that he expects of himself. But, look, just going back to that point about players that are on 150 grand a week or whatever they're on, whether they're on 100 grand or 50 grand, it's still a lot of money. Fans are entitled to voice their opinion on a player's performance. But I just don't think fans are entitled to abuse their own players.
My point is about abuse.
We sit here and criticize players. I don't think there's a problem with that. Players will criticize themselves, but I'm talking about abuse. And he was abused by fans.
But
the point is, it shouldn't be happening to any of our players.
Jordan Henderson receives abuse like I've never seen.
I said that, Pete. Jordan Henderson gets more than any of them. But
I'm not seeing a point, Andy, where it's above and beyond anybody that's there. Say it while you're there. Listen, if you don't like the abuse,
I'd like to see some of the other players step up now. I'd like to see Henderson say, yeah, like, and Henderson is the type of fella who will stand up and say to put a message out there that the players don't need that shit. They don't need, you know, okay. They probably feel if they do say it, they're being a bit precious. They're getting played a lot of money. They probably will think that they're looking to be exempt from all sort of criticism. But I'm talking about abuse, Pete. Stop abusing your fucking own players on social media.
No, it's not doing any good. I agree with you there.
And it's not about me about Gini and Alan. It's about all the players. The only time I'd ever go take the social media to abuse a player if they weren't putting it in for the shirt. And we've been lucky the last few years that we've had players that have come in and gave it all. The whole fucking squad there deserves to be there based on their efforts.
When it comes to abuse, nobody should abuse anyone who does something far beyond that you could ever dream of having the ability to do.
Gini Wijnaldum gave everything for Liverpool. You know what I mean? He didn't deserve any abuse from fans.
I'm gonna
step in because Red Steve's asked me if anything else is on tonight.
I thought
Andy made a good recovery from a Conor McGregor style kind of broken leg there when Pete started launching into his side of the argument. So fair play for.
I always listen.
And look, it's prompted a super chat as well from Steve Thomas. So, look, you're getting paid for all of this. No one should ever take comments or abuse on social media seriously. People would say to your face, it's not real. Treat it the bullshit it is. I mean,
That's wrong, though. That's wrong. We've got people.
I think it's easy to say that if you've never been, and I've never, thankfully, been on the receiving end. I think, Steve, in fairness, I think if you probably were in a position where you were getting constant abuse of any kind on social media, and didn't even have to be on social media, it could be, you know, in the real world, so to speak, I think that would take its toll on anyone that it was persistently directed at. We can all take the odd bit of criticism. I'm sure we've all got degrees of thick skin, but for someone to be consistently abused on any level, I think it is wrong. And I get both sides of the argument, lads, but we'll move it on. We'll go on to, and Pete, we're on to your topic. Hopefully Andy will completely strip this one down, but we're on to football. We're on to the accountability in football. And I know that you've been keeping a keen eye on, you know, Manchester City, because I know it doesn't sit right with you how they operate as a football club. We talk about how we're operating as a football club and we do it in one particular way. Man City is a completely different kettle of fish, yeah?
Yeah, let's be honest. I mean, look, I just think to frame this, you know, look at the amount of, I mean, Shane would back me up on this, the amount of idiots you get and the amount of people that you'll get who are criticising Liverpool. I've been very, very impatient with Liverpool for not spending millions and millions over the last few days, like, you know, like other clubs are. By the way, the other clubs that are spending their money, you know, the Varane deal in particular, to use an example, that's to try and catch up with where we are now, but we won't even talk about that. I think Liverpool's run very deliberately and very, very stringently and, you know, very strictly, and we've seen a lot of the benefit over certainly the last three years. However, I received, and this all comes from the fact that as you guys know, you're in the WhatsApp group, I received a copy of a court injunction. I think I got it around the 25th or 26th of April concerning Manchester City from a journalist friend of mine in the UK, who I won't name, saying that this is real, that Man City are in court with the FA and the Premier League to try and put a super injunction on this. And I was kind of laughed out of the group. Oh, it's just a fake. It's just this. But then I got a message. I sent it to another friend of mine, a journalist friend of mine in the UK. And he sent me a message back saying, can you send me a clearer copy of this document. And that's when I started to think. And I got on to Phil and said, listen, I think this has legs. Anyway, it transpired in the end that the injunction was very, very real. And I think we've all witnessed what's been going on over the last few days. So effectively, where UEFA have failed, I mean, we've always talked within here, and Andy, you are probably the biggest advocate of saying that UEFA as an organisation aren't fit for purpose. And you're absolutely right, because they don't know their own rules. But one organisation that seems to understand their own rules is the Premier League, and they don't seem to be bound by, shall we say, the time constraints that UEFA are bound by. And I think the thing that interests me the most when I looked at some of the evidence, I looked at the fact that Simon Pearce, who is an Australian PR executive and has a seat, interestingly, on the Manchester City board. And basically, he's a PR consultant who's charged with, I don't like using the term whitewash because it sounds discriminatory, but he's been paid to, shall we say, cast the owners of Manchester City in a favourable light, shall we say, in the Western world. And he's, to all intents and purposes, he's doing a very, very good job. But a number of emails obviously had surfaced from Mr. Pearce where he was challenged on the fact that Manchester City would like to report their financial income and their financial health in a more healthy way, to which he responded. And I don't know if anyone knows the ins and outs of this, but he responded. Basically, he was asked if he could make a 3 million sponsorship look like closer to 23 million. And his response within the chain of email is, yes, of course, we can do what we like. And the shortfall in finance will be made up by the owners. So a number of these emails have come to light. Now, this is off the back of Manchester United's FA Cup win and then their subsequent couple of Premier League wins. So I think what kind of made me choose this topic is I know that it's very, very frustrating for Liverpool fans out there to wait and wait and wait and wait. But you must remember, there's two things I'd like to point out before we get into what's going on at Manchester City with the Premier League. I mean, first of all, when any player, any agent out there worth his salt, because it's Christmas Eve now for agents out there, when any player wants to inflate his client, any agent wants to inflate his client's worth out there, he links him to Liverpool. So that should tell you enough, because Liverpool play their cards close to their chest. Liverpool won't come out and they won't deny that they're interested in the player. They'll issue some sort of polite response that player might be on the radar, but he's far too expensive. Or they might just say, listen, we've done our business and like today, we don't expect any more incomings. So people use Liverpool for a reason because of the discretion and the absolute secrecy. And I would point to the Fabinho deal. None of us, not Griezmann, nobody knew that was coming. It was very much, this is a guy that's been on Manchester United's radar for 2.5 years. And by the way, he just signed. Not signing, he signed for Liverpool. That's the way Liverpool do business. But Manchester City, because of the millions that they're spending and because of the fact that they're trying to invent the fact that they've had a £600 income in sponsorship since 2013, which is more than Liverpool, Everton, Manchester United and Chelsea combined, are coming under that spotlight. Because I'm looking at, to be honest with you, particularly two things. Looking at Barcelona and the fact that they're under pressure and they have no choice but to declare that they've had no match day income. So they're going to, Barcelona on the brink of having to basically show the door to 13 first team players in order to keep one or two happy, one in particular, and in order to bring in two or three key players that they really want. So Barcelona next year will effectively be 14 players, 14 top players, believe it or not, and the rest will be kids. And Manchester City are balling it out, basically. They're saying, well, the rules aren't fit for purpose. Manchester United, AC Milan, and Real Madrid had their own way for 25 years, and we don't see why this FFP has to be in effect. So the balls and out. I think, to be honest with you, I don't want to bore people anymore with this, but the long and short of this will they'll receive a huge fine from the Premier League unless the Premier League are more prepared than UEFA, which I don't expect. And I don't see, a lot of people are hoping for them to be stripped of titles. I don't see that happening. And I think even a lot of their balls out fans are kind of laughing. The whole Simon Pearce thing, their PR consultant who sits on the board, when he issued that statement and said on the email, we do what we want. Sure, they use that as a chant. And I wanted to kind of highlight the lack. I mean, football has descended into a joke where you would almost prefer UEFA, the Premier League, even FIFA to say, listen, if you've got the money, fair play to you. You're going to dominate. And good luck to anyone that's trying to, you know, catch up. Because that's the reality of it. I mean, there's the fair FFP is not worth the paper it's written on. And I suppose we're probably all relying on the Premier League to do something spectacular and to have their legal ducks in a row. But if UEFA's lack of preparation, not knowing their own rules, not knowing how to gather evidence, not knowing their own statute of limitations in terms of time constraints is anything to go by, I'm not holding out much hope. And I'm just hoping maybe that somebody else will have a different insight into this, because it's gone to the point where it's completely out of control, and it's sapping an awful lot of the joy out of this, where you're kind of thinking, here we go again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest takeaway from that was doubting Grizz Khan in 2021. So, it's unbelievable.
So nobody knew about it.
Andy, I've seen you taking kind of question time style notes there throughout Pete's delivery. You've obviously got some points ready to raise in response or in support maybe of your fellow Liverpool fan.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't aware of those leaks. Pete's a very, very connected individual, so I've no reason to doubt him. But it just, you know, it's interesting if Pete knows that other owners of the clubs across the Premier League know it. They all know what's going on. And when you talk about Liverpool, can they not just change their transfer policy? I mean, what does that entail for Liverpool owners? When you're looking at the figures involved and they're just writing off 20s and 20 million, 50 million, sponsorship 100 million. You can't expect Liverpool to throw in, the owners to throw in 5 or 10 million. It's not going to put a hole in it. So no. Their best bet is to just stick to the plan and try and get their competitive advantage a different way. It's what's frustrating. Well, Liverpool fans that criticise the owners or other teams that criticise their owners should be doing is putting that energy into fucking tackling UEFA and the Premier League. You know, I'm sick of the lack of accountability in football. You know, whether it's referees making bad decisions or the people in Stockley Park making bad decisions, Premier League protecting referees, UEFA protecting each other. At the end of the day, they're happy to let these things slide. They're happy to make mistakes in procedures, investigation procedures, because at the end of the day, all their big guys are coining it from that. The more money that's passing through football, the more money that goes into UEFA. Okay, City might be hiding a lot of it and pretending it's not there, but without City's money, you know what I mean? There's less money in the game, less money for sponsorship. So City are making it look like there's more money to be made by football, and it's actually increasing the value of their product and all the products across Europe, including the Champions League or whatever else. So that's why they'll never really, really hold people accountable. And that's what corporate governance is, the lack of corporate governance across the whole globe. Once somebody can also coin, they're not going to blow the whistle. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how that all pans out, if it's investigated by other parties. But it really is the downfall in football fans or the owners of clubs' energy. Yeah, let's start, you know, really putting a microscope in these clubs who are taking absolute piss.
I mean, Ant Dicko makes the point, Rangers and Juve got relegated for financial doping.
It was different though. With Rangers, they set up an offshore salary system where they were paying guys like, for example, Tor-Andre Flo. They were paying in a time when normal players were on 6, 7, 8 grand. They were paying guys that came 55 grand offshore and not declaring it. It was that was completely off the scale. Completely off the scale. I mean, what
Juve was referee, that was Calciopoli. That wasn't.
Yeah,
financial.
I mean, there was a chief executive. Exactly, a chief executive of Juventus. Actually, he was a very, very good player. I can't remember his name, but he tried to commit suicide over that. It was real. That was coercion and a lot of criminal.
Yeah, activity. that was Passato, I think. And
it was.
Yeah, that was Maggi, the referee, and getting favourable referees. It wasn't even match fixing, as what a lot of people think. It was more just dicking it to get favourable referees that they liked.
Yeah, so, I think the difference between now the Premier League's investigation and UEFA's investigation is the statute of limitation. A lot of Manchester City supporters and good friends of mine, like Mick Brennan and that online, good lads, they're good, honest Manchester City supporters since the days of Franny Lee. You know, these guys as well want to see the truth. And the difference is that they don't have the same restraints at the Premier League. UEFA, you know, for some reason UEFA have time constraints, so they can actually look at, you know, what has happened without any fear of any kind of statute of limitations. So I would be more kind of hopeful that there would be some level of accountability. Manchester City supporters, you know, some of the Twitter addy will tell you we were exonerated, which is not an exact truth. A lot of the evidence was inadmissible. So by qualification of that, they were exonerated of wrongdoing, but it was acknowledged that they had withheld the evidence long enough in order to make the evidence inadmissible, which is an absolute madness in itself. The Premier League won't have that problem, and they will have the smoking guns, and they have the time on their side. So it'll be very, very interesting to see what they actually do.
But, I mean, plenty of comments coming in around the fact that Davo, this ultimately probably ends up playing out to no more than a fine. I mean, no one seems to really want to bring, you know, City to task over this, do they?
No. Listen, I don't. These kind of things are great for journalists to get the headlines and to get the stories out, and they're absolutely articles that should be written, etc. But for the, like the boys said, for the governing bodies and for the governance involved, they want this gone as quick as possible. They don't want it getting dragged on. They just want to get something, find them guilty of something, get them a fine, get it swept under the carpet, and let's just get back to the less headaches, the better. I don't know.
I think the Premier League, if you look at the judge's findings when he actually rejected the gagging order, he said that justice, in the interest of justice, needing to be seen to be done. I think that heaps, although the Premier League are gunning for Manchester City, it might actually heap pressure on the judicial system to actually, you know, form some sort of accountability where they have to be seen. I mean, we're all aware that Manchester City will sign a check for 30, 40 million, even in a fine, and laugh in your face. And there needs to be something. There needs to be some sort of gesture. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, you know, you would hope that they might look at, for example, the email that I talked about was sent 6 days before Sergio Aguero's goal against QPR that won them their first title. So it goes all the way back there. So the span of control for punishment will go back to the Premier League titles, all the way back to the Premier League titles that they won. So for all intents and purposes, there was financial doping that covered those Premier League titles. Premier League know this. You know, this is not new. This goes all the way back to 2011. So I think
Andy made a good point about, like, it should be used. Like, your wife had come out and was trying to be the good guys when all the Super League stuff came out, and they've been repeatedly showing that they're as crooked as any Super League or anything like that. As Gavin Walsh says there in the betting, if you break betting rules, you get the book thrown at you. We see Nicholas Bentner with Paddy Power boxers on getting fined more than you get fined for racially abusing players at international tournaments. You've also the likes of Seemley. It came to pass near the end of Euros. I think England were having second thoughts with COVID about maybe the final and semi-finals. The capacity-wise, they still wanted to hold it, but they didn't know about capacity. And UEFA told them, listen, Viktor Orban over in Budapest here, he'll put 65,000-70,000 in that stadium. So if you're not going to put 65,000 or 75,000 in Wembley, the finals and semi-finals are going there, and that's all to do with money. It's nothing to do with safety. So I think Andy is right. I think if you can redirect kind of like UEFA and the good guys, they just aren't. Yeah. They're rotten to the core. They got their own way over the man. Their own rules got in the way over the original city. The original city decision. So I mean, like they're just like the Super League should have been really be a wake up call for everybody.
I mean, the end of the day, this, you know, if you think about it, if the Premier League, you know, really wanted to go after Manchester City and essentially, you know, what Pete's saying in terms of going back all that time, strip Manchester City of several Premier League titles. I mean, how much does that devalue the Premier League? Like, they're essentially going to be destroying their own credibility, their own brand. I mean, if you liken it to cycling, and you know the dope and that was uncovered in cycling, it's a tainted sport now. The Premier League would become a tainted competition for many years to come. So they're hardly going to want to put themselves through that pain. Of exposing a club on their watch of doing this. So the
I was about to make that exact point. It devalues their product.
Yeah. But I would say the opposite, Ray. They have the opportunity to tidy it up. I mean, for example, if you look at Project Longbow, which is another project on top of the inflation of the sponsorship deals to the tune of 127 million euros back then. Manchester City set up a shell company to buy the image rights of their own players. And it was all legal and legit at the time under the terms of employment of those players. But the money, of course, came from Abu Dhabi. So it was a complete... It's a complete cycle of corruption. You know, the Premier League have this. They have this solid. This is not speculation. This is all stuff that's documented. So they have the opportunity to actually say, well, no. I mean, to give you another example, I think they own 6 clubs worldwide, including New York City and Al Jazeera. I think it's Al Jazeera club they own. When Roberto Mancini was in charge of Manchester City, he was paid by Sheikh Mansour to advise off the books with Al Jazeera. I mean, this is the way they operate within their own companies. All of the sponsorship deals that came into Manchester City that were worth in reality 2-3 million that were inflated up to 10 times that amount are all cousins, friends and associates of Sheikh Mansour. I mean, this is the
way they box clever. They know it's always going to be seen as speculation. The only time the Premier League will ever do what you're saying, Pete, and use that opportunity is if they're backed into a corner and they've got no other choice. Otherwise, they're going to just try and protect the value of the Premier League. And the last thing they want to see is like the Serie A when it took a hit, when all the match fixing was going on. This is just as bad. You know what I mean? It's under their watch. They're the ones that should have been controlling all this, and they failed to do so, all because they know that if they took City apart, it devalues the Premier League. And it's the richest league in the world at the moment.
I don't know about the value, Andy, because Manchester City's pulling power is money. It's not anything to do with a fan base. I'll give you an example. If you were to do this to Manchester United, that'd be a massive problem, because Manchester United are a worldwide, globally recognised brand. Where it would be a massive... It's like Lance Armstrong. What happened to Lance Armstrong, you look at cycling and you go, who's dope and who's not now? Do I really even want to watch this? If that was... Yeah. But with Manchester City, it's like taking Middlesbrough and putting them to the top of the tree. You know, you're not going to damage... You're not going to damage the brand of football by putting Manchester City in a place.
I don't think you would miss Man City as such. They're not the brand, but you would... you would essentially, you know, you're chucking out a team that's won that league a number of times now. They didn't just go and win it once, like a, you know, a Blackburn or whatever. They've they've been there. They've won it several times now. You would I think certainly for the international market, you would definitely taint the Premier League brand. Yeah.
Look at the slice of cake they have, the trophies they've won domestically, the money that they bring into the Premier League, the money that they take out of Premier League. They're too big of a stakeholder than to just shoot dead like that. And look, as fans, we'd love it. And most fans would agree across all the leagues in England that they don't really see City as a massive club. But for the Premier League and UEFA, they are a massive club because
I want to get to Owen Burke's comments. Everyone's probably read it by now, but City stopping this from going public and a gagging order put on journalists definitely means they've nothing to hide.
Bucky is right. I mean, this is a smoking gun, and let's be honest with you, it's like it's clever what they've done. They've gone into Manchester, the great Manchester area. They've bought a lot of the, I don't know if you're familiar with the area, but they've bought up an awful lot of the area, you know, kind of, they've really invested heavily in local, kind of the local working community, the local property community. They, in fairness, they've done that, but it's fantastic PR. So I understand, you know, everybody has a price, and if where I live all of a sudden becomes this bastion of growth, of course I'm going to defend them. But there's a reason that they've done that. There's a reason that they've done that, because the billions, the unlimited wealth, by the way, of where they come from, of the country that they rule.
And, fuck off then.
Exactly. Yeah, fuck off to today, tonight. It comes off the back of, you know, of questionably, shall we say, a regime, a very, very harsh regime. But, like, listen, that's a conversation for another night. We're talking about the rules being broken. But no, I don't agree that Manchester City would be missed at the top table. I don't agree, to be honest.
It's kind of like to round the kind of, I suppose, back to Liverpool as it's a boring chat, as someone said. But I mean, It comes back every, kind of rears its head every summer with signings and stuff like that. Some fans want us, we should be sold with a Russian oligarch or a state, or they want us to go bigger on transfers and stuff like that. Look, I'm kind of, it is a difficult one. Like, someone sit you down and go, right, if FSG sold to Saudi Arabia or something like that, and they're plowing money in, I'd hate to be having this conversation around Liverpool in 5 years. I really would. It has what way it's gone, or if you end up going down this route. And I know, listen, you're not giving yourself, or you could be giving yourself, a better opportunity to win things if you were owned by a state and they're plowing money in. But like, FSG aren't taking any money out, right? They will get the return on their dividend when they sell the club at some stage, after increasing Anfield, new training ground, the infrastructure of the club being in the top four or five, six in the world. So if they do their business a certain way, I'm fine with that, because it's a double-sided coin. Of course, I'd like us to be playing fucking 400 million in every summer and stuff like that, but it's been said before.
Well, we got a few comments tonight about that old gear, but that's the best, I think.
That is quality. But yeah, look, I would hate to be, I'd hate to be having this conversation around Liverpool. Like, we've got good owners. Yeah, look, could the portions be opened a little bit more? Possibly, but listen.
Andy, can I ask you a question? And you will know what I mean by this. Is it any surprise to you, given what we think of Harry Kane secretly and openly, that Harry Kane seems to be chomping at the bit to sign for Manchester City? Do you follow my thinking here? Absolutely none. I mean, it just says it all for me. It's the path of least resistance. It's one of the reasons I don't like Harry Kane. And I'm insulted when people try to compare him to Mohamed Salah. Mohamed Salah came to Liverpool, you know, and basically as a challenge. And this is why I think he's beyond reproach and beyond criticism. Harry Kane is looking, don't get me, he's given years to Spurs, but he's looking at it going, okay, where can I take me shortcut to the glory? And Harry Kane is everything that I hate about football. And Mohamed Salah is everything I love about it.
I think that's an interesting comment there from Christopher Carroll, Ray.
Yeah, I mean, would you not question United in 92 when it all started? They jumped ahead of everyone with the TV sponsorship.
I wouldn't question them. I think if it wasn't United, it would have been someone else.
Yeah.
And I think as much as we hate the Manx, they were the ones that had the vision and the balls and the foresight to go ahead and use their brand. You know, and we stood still under the Moors at the time, and we were bigger than them. We were way bigger than them back then. I mean, we were coming out of the '80s by dominating everything Europe. Liverpool was well more recognised than Manchester United across the world. But what they did in a similar model to how American sport was going is they just jumped on the bandwagon first.
100%.
And off they went. And it took us a full 20 years probably to cop on. It's only really FSG now.
100%.
Didn't Hicks and Gillette say they were, I know, listen, their persona non grata or whatever, but didn't they say they were amazed at how bad our commercial end of things were when they got to the club? They said it was disgraceful.
In fairness to Manchester United were doing in the 1990s what Michael Edwards is doing now.
100%. Now, and look, it's gone a bit messy for United because you see how their fans feel about their owners now. There is a lot of money. There is a lot of debt in the club.
They lost them now, Andy. They're still paying shareholders.
Yeah, and then look, they're the masters of shutting their own up. I mean, I don't think half the United fans really know what they're arguing about. But if you look at it, it's like that. The massive debt is there, but they have the brand there that they know that it's safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You look at, say, Chelsea are far more fragile, I would say. If Abramovich ever does get bored or else he gets in big trouble, Chelsea are gone. They're gone forever off the face of the earth.
They can end up like mates in the abyss for 20 years.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I suppose the same goes to City to a certain extent, but look, I'm happier the way Liverpool are being ran, and if they do follow United's model, which is what they're going to have done, let's face it, and it's made us competitive, it's made us to get back on the map and start to win trophies again, attract better players, attract the manager like Klopp. You know what I mean? We worry too much about other clubs. Look at Liverpool, it is a sustainable future, and I would take it all day long ahead of what other clubs are dealing with.
Absolutely. I think there's definitely a consensus here in terms of which type of club we'd rather be getting behind in terms of, and then at the end of it, we got the European Cup, we got the Premier League, we won it in a way that we all feel immensely, satisfied and proud of. I think it's fair to say that, we certainly didn't buy our way to anything over the course of those successful seasons. So we'll bring it, look, to finish off, we'll bring it sort of back onto the pitch in some respects, or at least bring it back to the season that lays ahead. I mean, it is, and this was my subject really. For me, this feels like the most exciting Premier League season ever in some respects. I mean, we just spoke there about, the brand, the Premier League brands. I mean, let's just forget about the fact that it's, that it is the Premier League or whatever, just from the point of view of what everyone has been through over the last, year to sort of 15, 16 months, in our own personal lives, but just in terms of what we've missed, we got a glimpse of it in the Euros, fans back in stadiums. I mean, I've been in Liverpool for the last 3 weeks,
it was definitely evidence that society is getting back to normal, and I mean normal, with all the restrictions now being dropped from last Monday, and the prospect of, you know, games now at Anfield, full houses. It's still a bit mind-boggling, really, in some respects, but it is gonna happen. We're gonna see full stadiums from day one, you know, please God. But we're gonna see full stadiums. We're now in a situation where, you know, ourselves, Liverpool, we've got so many players coming back next season. You know, we lost out so much in terms of injury last season. We've got all these players coming back, you know, few new players added to the mix. You know, we've got the European champions in the league in Chelsea. And, you know, Tuchel himself, you know, is still riding the crest of a wave. We've got Ole at the wheel with his contract extension. We've got them splashing the cash. You know, we've got, obviously, City who are going to be there. You know, they're still the ones to beat. And who knows? I mean, you know, Brendan continues to sort of work miracles for like three quarters of the season and then fade off badly. We've got full stadiums for a limited time only. I thought someone would bite on that prospect. And in fairness, I think we may only get a few games with full stadiums, but that remains to be seen. And then we've got, you know, we've got Tottenham with the new manager coming in. Who knows what he can do there? And then you've got Rafa. I mean, Rafa, you know, coming into Everton as a bit of a sideshow, really. I mean, he's gonna, you know, that's gonna give us a little bit of extra spice every week to see what sort of meltdowns those fans have when they, you know, when they get a draw where they should have won a game, and so on and so forth. So to me, this is really starting to feel like it has all the makings of being, you know, the best Premier League ever, really. I mean, Andy, what's your excitement level now? We're only a few weeks away from smashing Norwich by 5 goals.
it's really exciting. It's just that bit of uncertainty that's still there. The way things are escalating, with COVID cases again. If it's going to be such a kick in the stones if the grounds are full and then they have to rein back in on it. But look, if it goes to plan and we get out of all of this now and the ground is full again, players are back, we start winning games, It's just going to give the whole fucking a lot of us a lift. Like, it's just going to be to sit down and watch a game and not have to listen to fake crowd noise. The guy was even still felt a bit negative going into the Euros. Didn't really watch too many of the group games. I kind of felt like maybe this thing might get suspended. You know, the Olympics was barely going ahead. But if things go as you really set it up there, Ray, the Sky don't even need to do one of those special ads. Because what we've all had to endure for the last year or so, year and a half, this is going to be unbelievable. The players will feel it, the fans are going to feel it, and it's just like not having to like watch. Could we just bore to death with football where there was games on all the time? I just can't wait to be watching a game on a 3 o'clock on a Saturday and looking at other results coming in as well, and that sort of normality. And to be able to have a pint in a pub, watching a game or after a game to get over to them. No, it's going to be great. As long as it all goes to plan, you're dead right. I think it's going to be one of the best. It's like after such a big reset, we recognise how many of the little things are so important. You know, you never would have imagined in your wildest dreams of losing what we've had in the last year and a half. And if Liverpool can get off to a good start, winning the league next year would be just incredible. Like, to not be able to celebrate the last one, like, that Liverpool will literally just fucking blow up. Yeah. It would be fucking mad. Yeah. And I really do fancy us going into this season. I think I said last season, I really feared the empty ground. I think we're the team that is most affected by an empty Anfield. And look, not only did we lose our unbeaten run, like, we lost 6 in a row or something. That just doesn't happen on Anfield with a full ground. I can't fucking wait.
It wouldn't have happened. I mean, Davo, I mean, I was excited last week going round Aldi without a mask on. I mean, you know, that's where I'm at. You know what I mean? I can't even imagine going into a full Anfield, you know, 60,000 in a few weeks' time. I'm not going to be lucky enough to. But can you imagine the excitement of being at that first game?
Oh, look, Andy kind of hit the nail on the head. And I think we're all going to be similar, as in crowds getting back and the fans and the players kind of reuniting after being like, which has been like, what has it been like? It's been 15 months, hasn't it? 16 months since crowds, probably longer, obviously, with the break in the seasons. But listen, the one thing I'm looking forward to, and I hope they do it, and I don't give two fucks if we get slagged, like we got slagged when Klopp got the lads to do a bow in front of the Klopp after the West Brom 2-2 draw. I hope the players bring the Premier League trophy out and parade to the fans. I really fucking do. Fuck it. City are going to do it. They won it last year, right? No fans in the ground. We won it the year before. No fans in the ground. I honest to Jesus, I hope they do it, and I hope we get slagged and everything about it, but I don't give a fuck. The fans like yourself, Ray, that are going week in, week out and all, like, they deserve that. And I'd love to be sitting there watching it, to be quite honest with you. And I mean that. I genuinely mean that. I don't give a fuck about getting canned or anything like that. I swear to God, we waited 30 years. I don't give a shit. Like, we'd wait one more to show it to the... That trophy has never been paraded at Anfield. Yeah. Right? Fair enough. It's a year later than you would have been doing it. But it still should be paraded, in my opinion.
I mean, there is a replica in the ground, believe it or not. There is, you know, you can still, you know, it can be whipped out the cabinet. Mm. Like, I mean, even if it wasn't, like, officially done, like, you know, if someone just decided to go up there and just whip it out and off the cuff, you know, he or she's got my support to do that right now, you know what I mean? Just do it. I mean, I'm excited at the prospect of even going to the pub for the first game against Norwich and being out with some of the lads. I mean, you know, we've not been able to do that, even, you know, just socialise with our mates and watch a game on the telly. I mean, the whole thing about now getting back to a proper football programme, you know, 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday and not having every game televised, you know, I think, you know, that again is just a sense of normality sort of thing. I mean, Pete, you know, I think I heard a couple of weeks ago that we were down as, I think, third favourites to win the league this season, third or fourth favourites to win the league this season. I mean, where do you see us rank, you know, realistically in terms of...
To be honest with you, I'm always more optimistic when everybody writes us off. It's, you know, it's when we're at our best, when the weight of expectation is off our shoulders. People are putting Chelsea ahead of us, obviously putting Manchester City ahead of us. They'll probably put Manchester United ahead of us now that they've signed a player that Real Madrid have been trying for 4 years to get rid of, to be honest. And that's a fact. They might even put Arsenal ahead of us. The more they do that, the better. Liverpool will quietly go about their business, welcoming back the best defender the Premier League has ever seen, and adding some more steel to it. So I fancy, to be honest, I think it'll be business as usual. It'll be a battle with Manchester City. And unless they recruit effectively, which I haven't seen yet so far, to be honest, they've given Fernandinho a new contract. You know, people treat Manchester City's rumours like Grealish and Kane, you know, as if they haven't really signed anyone of note. So... I fancy it, to be honest. I do fancy it. It's, for me, it's about the new lads coming back and keeping, you know, getting Mane back to what Mane is capable of, getting the crowd back through the door, which is a player for us. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of making huge changes. I think Wijnaldum has to be replaced, but I'm not a fan of making huge, especially with Liverpool. You don't really need to. Let everybody spend fortunes trying to catch up with where we actually are, which is effectively what they're doing. But good luck to them. You know,
I mean, Andy, righting the wrongs of last season is going to be one motivation. Second motivation really should be the fact that we won that league and it wasn't able to be paraded in front of the fans. So by winning the league, you know, this season. So it would almost be like winning it for the first time in 32 years, essentially. Do you think that Klopp has got the ammunition there to make these lads win this league again?
Absolutely. Look, Liverpool have come back after finishing runners up in the Premier League and win the league after. So we can do that again. When we did win it, they weren't able to enjoy it. You know what I mean? It was an extended season and they were straight back into football. Everything that kind of could go wrong went wrong with those horrific injuries, the timing of them, having no fans. Like, those players will want this. You know what I mean? Klopp, he's the ultimate when it comes to motivation and leadership. The incentive to parade that trophy around will be like winning it again. Yeah, they got to celebrate together that time in the hotel. They were all jumping around the veranda. What's it going to be like going around Liverpool? It will be like the first time winning it in long. It'll feel like that for the city as well.
It will.
How the place went off when the Champions League came home a couple of seasons ago. There won't be a celebration known like Liverpool winning the league next year. And I don't think that the players won't need to be told. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna finish up. It was just past the hour and a half mark. I'm gonna finish up, lads, by, you know, coming out with one of the questions. I think it was Kevin Ball who asked the question, and it's an interesting one because Shawnee Lawson has been putting into the chat on a consistent basis that he would prefer the Champions League this season. And it's a good, you know, it's a good question, given the choice, Champions League or Premier League. Andy, what would be yours if you were told we're going to win one of those next season?
Oh, it's the Premier League, like, because the last Champions League we won, we got to parade it around the city and we got to celebrate it properly. We didn't get to celebrate that league properly. I would have took the Champions League last season because it was an unusual season and you knew you weren't going to get to celebrate it properly. But this year, with fans back, and hopefully we don't going to have any more setbacks to deal with the pandemic, hopefully by next May, things are 100% normal again. So it's a no-brainer for me. I wouldn't even consider it. Okay, wouldn't be a bad second prize if they didn't win the league, but the league all over. And like someone said in the comments there, to go level with United, we have to do that. We have to do it soon.
Yeah.
Klopp won't be around forever.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know who Klopp's successor will be. You can't tell the future in football. But I think now is the time for Liverpool to take advantage of the fact that we are so lucky to have Klopp at the moment. And one Premier League won't be enough. I mean, we have to celebrate at least one of those in front of the fans.
Yeah, just as importantly, Ole won't be around forever as well, and I'll take Klopp over Ole any day of the week. Davo, are you on board with that Premier League over the Champions League?
Yeah, I think so. Now, listen, the Champions League wouldn't be a consolation prize now either if we ended up winning it, you know what I mean? But I do.
If it meant beating Man City in the final, I think I'd take the Champions League.
But I would have, for the reasons Andy said, it'd be nice to get level. We think we do need to win another league. Like, Klopp isn't going to be around for ages. But, yeah, I think, listen, you're the best team over 38 games against some big clubs, like as you alluded to, right, the European champions are Chelsea, and then obviously City as well. So, listen, I think I would probably be just prefer the league.
Yeah. And the sirens blaring behind you there, Pete Joe Walsh on his way to a call.
City's lawyers on their way to take me away.
So let me ask you a slightly different question, Pete. Do you think we will win one of the Premier League or the Champions League?
Yeah, I think if we continue the policy that we have towards the other two cups, the domestic cups, which is to not pay them any kind of reverence or respect at all, I think we'll go out guns blazing. We need to beef up squad options. I expect them to bring in more first team ready players, probably before the end of the window. I think that's probably the gambit, is to get rid of a couple of the fringe lads, to really talk these guys in and to have, you know, more beefy options and to give the two competitions a go. I think that's always the plan with them. You know, throw the kids into those two cups. And as much as it winds us up during the season, I'm kind of looking at other teams having a good time, and we get nostalgic about this, particularly the FA Cup. I think it's sensible. Go for those two competitions as far as you can. I think Andy's right. If we have a good solid start, which is always Liverpool, if we get a good solid start the first 8 to 10 games, I can really see us, you know, going all the way with the lads that are back. You know, I don't see why not, to be honest, as long as the goals flow.
Yeah, I think the other thing, I'm going to make a prediction of my own now. I think Rafa wins a trophy this season. Just throw that out there. I think Rafa does the
business. He already did.
Florida Cup.
And he got stick for not saluting the fans.
That fella's on a hiding to Notton, isn't he? But we'll enjoy that. That'll be, I'm sure that'll be a hot topic as the season progresses anyway. So, look, that is the forum.
Come here, just before we go, I know, yeah. David Lennon in the comments won't be happy if I don't address a massive golf match we had yesterday in the city of Lorgan. Up in the north of Ireland, myself and Veranda Cheese made the long trip north yesterday.
Good God.
And we had a game of golf. Myself and Gav teamed up to take on Neil, Veranda Cheese, Larrigan and Dave Lennon. And we did lose the match on the 15th hole. I won't throw Gav under the bus. It just wasn't our day. Fair play to the Wardy winners. They played great golf. Captain Veranda Cheese.
Are you saying that you're the carry Gav?
I'm not saying that, and I said I wouldn't throw him under the bus. Although we did have a little hissy fit. It was the 11th. As far as I know, and he pulled the ball left out of bounds.
My God,
we won't say whose house it hit, but it hit a house.
I mean, Gav's been claiming to be, you know, shooting 81s, 82s consistently all summer.
Yeah, look, golf is a funny game. You only get a loan of it, but he got
a loan of Joe Walsh's putter.
He refused to play a second provisional ball. And I was like, you know, Gav, we're a team here. Play your second ball. No. So is this what it is now? Is this a tantrum? Like, are you throwing the fucking toys out of pram? So anyway, after thinking about it for about 20 seconds, he says, all right, then I'll play another ball anyway. And that one went left as well. it wasn't the best game from me either. It wasn't the best game from Gav, but the lads played some good golf. True. It was a great course, Lorgan Golf Club.
You won't be going back anytime soon, is what?
No, we'll go up. We had a nice meal and some points afterwards. I had a chicken burger, one of the nicest chicken burgers I've ever had. So Dave will want me to compliment the food there, because he was a little bit nervous I was going to take their menu apart. But it was nice grub. The only criticism I would have is, have you ever been served a burger without chips?
Very rarely.
No, if you order a burger, you get chips with it. That's automatic. You shouldn't have to ask. Anyway, the burgers came without chips.
Very surprised.
I was very surprised. So there wasn't a good chip on the day at all from me. Anyway,
we'll finish here. We've got a super chat coming from Azam Mahmood. Two signings and we're ready to win again. Badly need to inject freshness into the squad, but with quality midfield and wide attacker, Sal and Rafinha for me. Don't be static, FSG. Yeah, I think there is a little bit of a fear that we will kind of, you know, I guess the last transfer window, we're still kind of raw from that, and the fact that we were kind of caught on the hop a little bit, but hopefully we'll secure the targets in time in this window, and we'll be able to go with a decent squad into battle for the first half of the season and see where we're at in January. So look, we're going to wrap up. Thanks to Andy, Top Red. Thanks to Davo.
Gav and Andy will shrink back, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, remains to be seen. Thanks to Davo for his endorsements. Thanks to Pete for his legal input. And and thanks to the people in the chat. I mean, I'm going to call out a few people because there's some regulars in here, but Red Steve, Owen Burke, Laura Duffy,
Mohammed Jaggi,
David Lennon, Mohammed, yeah, top man. He weighs in. R. Allison, we had Dave in a little bit earlier. We even had
Shawnee
in a little bit earlier. Stephen Dunn. Look, we really value and also mentioned the last minute win a podcast as well. Kevin Ball, look, and Dicko. We this podcast is what it is. I dip in and out of some of these podcasts as a viewer. It is what it is because of these people who consistently turn up on a nightly basis. Definitely. And thanks to all of you for listening and subscribing. We'll be back later this week. There's plenty of shows lined up. Know for certain that Jamie will be here on Wednesday with his midweek podcast. Always entertaining. He's got an absolute top crew. So we'll be back next Monday with the forum. Phil may be back. He's on sabbatical at the moment. So before I ramble on too long, over and out.
Oh, just one thing, Sienna Steps, Phil Anfield. The link is in the description, all over Twitter. No excuse. €1 or £1 into Anfield. Bring the family. Let's fill this ground for Sienna. She deserves it. And thanks to everybody that's contributed so far. But there's still plenty of people that we can squeeze into Anfield. So, yeah, let's do it for Sienna, boys and girls. Night-night. Podcast Network.